Welcome back to Feeding the Mouth That Bites You, a weekly podcast guide on parenting teens and launching them into the world. I'm Cynthia Yanoff, and as always, I'm joined by psychologist and author Dr. Ken Wilgus. Hey, Dr. Ken, how are you?
Cynthia, I'm good. How are you?
Good. I came back for another week.
I know. It was touchy. Touch and go. Is that true?
It was.
Yes.
I think I got pretty insulted on the first full episode we did last week.
I thought we edited that whole thing out. Didn't we edit my insults? I thought we did.
I think one time when you were on my podcast a while back, I think we titled it like Asking for a Friend. And I would just ask all these questions that were straight out of my own parenting.
You have some messed up friends. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, they're terrible. They're terrible parents. So speaking of terrible, if I have this right, this might be episode like 217-ish, somewhere in there. I could be off by one or two.
Okay. Off. I don't know.
And I don't think you've been canceled yet, but this may be the one. Is this the one where you get canceled because you're about to go rogue on some things related to mental health diagnosis? But I guess you're allowed. You're a doctor.
Let's say it this way. It is possible. Mm-hmm. I have gotten in for some clues that I am getting to be a bit of a curmudgeon about some stuff. But you promised to tell me if we get there. Because there are some things that people get, especially about psychology, that people can get so fired up about that concerns me. It's not, psychology's great, but it ain't everything. It's not a magic pill.
I don't feel like this is the point in the podcast where I brag, but did you know I was a psychology major?
I think that was the thing your husband regretted the most, is marrying, as I recall, but yeah.
Yeah, psychology major, straight to law school, then to podcasting. I've really gone from point A to point B, but what was your major, Dr. Ken, in college?
Listen, when I got to the big grad program I made, which was, they had this meeting of everyone, and they're talking about, well, I'm here because my band didn't work out or my latest book didn't. And I was like, this is all I know. I was a psych major as an undergrad. Mm-hmm. I have a master's in school psych. And now I'm doing psych. I don't know how to do anything else. So
this is
it's
what
all
I'm
been
good
psych
at
all along.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. I love it. All right. Well, so let's talk then about how planned emancipation works when we have kids that have a diagnosis of some sort, ADHD, autism, it could be a lot of things. Or, this will get you going, or if we suspect and we've declared that there is a diagnosis, but never actually got the diagnosis.
And so, you watched a YouTube that really showed you that, oh, that's what they have. Yeah.
WebMD.
Yeah, yeah.
WebMD.
Yeah. Yeah, WebMD, which should be called youprobablyhavecancer.com. So,
sure.
Here's an example. Like, we got an email in July. Do you have advice on using this parenting plan with children who've experienced trauma? And then she goes through and explains, and this kid did have trauma, by the way. We have a culture now where everybody's had trauma, but this was a kid that really had it. And then she lists out the diagnoses, ADHD, ODD, which is oppositional defiant disorder, PTSD, which is post-traumatic stress disorder, anger, so you get these lists of diagnoses. And the main thing I want to talk about is what is often implied in these questions. It may not be what she was getting at, but I get it a lot, is that, yes, this whole planned emancipation, I'm sure that's all fine. You got to have them prepared by the end of high school for their own autonomous stuff. But if there's fill-in-the-blank diagnosis, doesn't that tap the brakes on all of that? Doesn't that mean that we can't really be on that time frame? And this is one of the big kind of tests about, do you understand what it means that we don't really know when adulthood starts? We're a weird culture that we can get so far if you add not only our misunderstanding of what it means to be a young adult, but this new burden of there's parenting that means you can engineer your kid to be whatever, that comes together to make it seem like, I'm not sure I'm on board with this letting my post-high school child be an adult. Well, you don't get to be on board with that. You can hamstring your young adult, but that is the stage when our culture says they are, and you don't have that choice. So it's one of the many things that if a parent means, does this or that diagnosis make a difference in how I intervene with my adolescent? The answer is absolutely. But does it mean that we can't really expect them to reach these milestones, gain freedoms and so forth, my answer is an emphatic no. It means you still must give over those freedoms because you don't have the power to over control that and keep them safe until they're 24 or whatever. That's just hamstringing your young adult. With virtually, there are two or three exceptions, literally, but almost none of what we talk about are those exceptions.
Okay. So let's think about like our ADHD kiddos. And so they, and not even kiddos, we're talking teens, but we know as kids, we're told with ADHD that they tend to run, or they can often run a couple years behind socially, emotionally,
metaphorically, yes.
Yeah. So let's move forward to those teenage years. And I hear what you're saying. Do we still say, okay, well, if it was my other 16-year-old, I'm going to require X, Y, and Z, but since this one's 16, but operates at more 14, I'm not going to. And I hear you saying, well, the world is not going to take note at the first job and be like, oh, I thought they were 27, but they operate at 25. Right. And so walk us through how we approach that, when the realities of it is that that child operates young, but we're still holding them to the same standard as if there wasn't something going
on. So that's a great question. So if you have an 8-year-old ADHD, it's almost always a boy, then it's good parenting to, instead of just being mad that I told you to do it and you didn't do it, most of the parents know that, wait a minute, that's the kid you need to make sure you make eye contact with and have them repeat back the thing you're saying so that you know they've heard you, because the ADHD interferes with their ability to get, that's good parenting. By 15, for example, that goal has to shift to, does my young adult child know that he is ADHD? And what is he going to do about this? If you keep doing it, then they're not being prepared for this upcoming autonomy, this point when they have to be ready. So it's fine with an 8-year-old to repeat and all this. With a 15-year-old, you need to be very direct with, no, I told you that. I believe you that you didn't hear me. Because, as you know, I mean, your impulsivity, I don't want to hear about my impulse. So you don't think you're ADD? Is that just something you've decided? A lot of times, a teenager was never, if they're really treated well for the ADD, sometimes they don't realize that they have it. And so some stumbling into it is necessary for them to remember why I'm even doing these things. But the point being, as to your question, you don't lower the bar of what's needed. For example, we're leaving at 7:15, and but this 16-year-old is ADD. Well, then you talk to them about, what are you going to do? Because you know it's hard for you to keep track of time and whatever. I'm fine. Okay. And you probably have to leave whatever your thing is. Go ahead and leave a couple times. Listen to, was it last or 2 weeks ago, we talked about preparing for school and, you know, and how you're going to arrange that. But your ADD kid, it changes how you talk to them about the struggle. It shouldn't change what you expect from them, because the world will not do that either, and their school will not do that. And it also is another of many ways of saying, listen, I know you have ADD, but you're also a smart kid. I mean, you can figure this out. What are you going to do? Yeah, and have that confidence in them.
And we're just talking ADHD at this moment, but
that's one example. Yeah.
Yeah. One example. We're talking about any diagnosis. True or false that a lot of times, maybe the majority of the time, that these kiddos, these teens that have a diagnosis, they tend to be more experiential learners. And so I've seen this in my house. They have to be left, to your example, left at home and didn't make the carpool ride a couple times before they actually get it. Like, is that, have you found that to be the case? And is there something to, instead of helping them, we tend to want to help them not have consequences, but just
That's
leaning
exactly right.
into the consequences with them because they are more experiential a lot of times?
That's one of the big sources of speech making, is that in my compassionate heart, I really want to find words that I can say to you so you will hear me and avoid this uncomfortable reality if you're not ready. And you end up screaming. You know, it's like it doesn't necessarily work out. You do better to expect that it's not surprising if a young adult doesn't believe you, doesn't, you know, and need to experience some of those consequences. That doesn't make them disobedient. They're not listening to you. It's not about you. It's about, yeah, they probably need to feel some of those consequences. And a lot of times it's the parents that are more upset, because I don't want to have a teenager that's having these negative experiences. I want us to all get along and it's all good. Well, again, that is good, but that's really up to the Lord and your child. It's not for you to, you know, create this sort of great time when I have magic words and everything goes great. So yeah, leaning into it. But we're talking only about ADHD. There's other things like anxiety that, no, I'm not going to order for you at the restaurant. You're too old now. What are you going to do this weekend? You're not going out again. And again, with a teenager, you can't arrange play dates and whatever, but you need to talk directly with them about what they may kind of have a vague sense of. Well, I don't know that I'm anxious. Okay, what do you call it? Like, and get your read on what did these diagnoses need to become their diagnoses, that they know what it means and they have thought about what are they going to do about it. And part of that insight means that you as a parent are doing less about it and seeing them struggle some. That's not bad parenting.
Okay. What about one of our teens, let's say, that is medicated, has historically been medicated for whatever's going on, and they decide in their teen world that I no longer want to take the medication. It makes me feel loopy, or I'm just tired of it, or whatever the thing is. And so as a parent, what do we do with that?
Yeah, so that very commonly happens with ADD medicine, that they've been medicated so long, and it can be a good intervention, I'm not saying, but they don't really know why they're taking it anymore. The other one is not uncommon is some of the antidepressants are, they're not like magic. It takes 2 weeks to experience anything. And even with adults, it's part of the deal is to first be clear, what are we wanting this medicine to do? What is your patient's expectation, my patient's expectation? And with teenagers, they often, I don't know, my parents just said that I'm better on this medicine. Well, that means that when your teenager is in fact objecting to it, it's probably a clinically good thing. Like maybe they don't like it and that needs to be taken into account. One of the common ones is, well, he doesn't like it, but we can tell he's way better. He's not as depressed. Well, again, that's very important things to tell them why you're concerned. But I can just tell you for a fact, the idea of, yeah, so we still, quote, made him take the medicine. You would be stunned how many ways teenagers can hide a pill in the back of their cheek or whatever. You cannot make them. And again, even if you did, you've missed out on the important part is, then what will they do with this symptom? If they don't say they're depressed, what do you say is your thing? And what are you going to do about it? They need to own what this is. And most of the time, it's either, I mean, they know something's up. They just haven't named it the right thing. And you want to try to invite them into being better, basically, patients, if you will. Like, okay, if you agree that this is the thing, ADD isn't a great... Talk about their impulsivity. Talk about their lack of control of time, their messiness. It doesn't have to always be, you know, names, diagnoses. But what do you say it is, and what are you going to do? That's one of the things that's changed is for decades, people asked, we shouldn't give our kids diagnoses because that will just label them. And my answer was always, you don't have to worry about teenagers. They don't want to be diagnosed. Well, weirdly, in 5 years, that has flipped. There are many teenagers, it's kind of popular to diagnose themselves. And that's not good. It's actually can even kind of cause its own problem, in implying that, listen, here's the important thing in your life. You need to think about how you feel. You need to tell everyone what you're feeling. That's new and represents a kind of moving away from what is typically the desire to manage myself. I don't want you telling me a name of who I am and all that. So that's, you know, that's actually can be a problem of overdiagnosis that you might be as a parent or your teenager might be doing. And you want to be careful with that.
Okay. And so you said there's a couple diagnoses that would be an exception to following the plan as written, as intended. What would those be?
Just so think of it this way. If you have like a 19-year-old that you say, well, he's not ready yet because of this diagnosis, picture yourself explaining that to a judge or to a policeman who is going to hold this kid accountable for whatever they've done. That's really the exceptions. So that's going to include significant intellectual deficit where they're really not capable of, I'm talking 75 IQ and below, something more than just a concrete kind of adult. That can be an exception. The other exception can be a kind of a severe autism. You know, we've gotten so much better now that autism is spectrum, that you'll hear people diagnosed with autism in a way that's almost, I sometimes ask, well, I don't know what we've gained by that diagnosis. Like, he's very anxious and impulsive and not good socially. So there's levels of, even on the spectrum, autism spectrum diagnoses, that really don't mean anything. They're going to be fine. But severe autism, pre-language for sure, or no language, all that kind of stuff. Again, picture yourself explaining this to someone in the community. This is why you need to make an exception for my kid. And then the last is so rare, but there are, if there's a state of absolute psychotic, like truly out of touch with reality, and I don't mean, well, he thinks he can live on $20 a week. That is not crazy. That's just immature. Yeah. But my point being is that the reason I even bring those up is you can see just how those are very severe exceptions. Okay. Everyone else, your goal through young adulthood is to prepare them to know themselves well enough and to be able to present themselves so they will land in adulthood as best they can, whether it is college, which isn't the golden road to everything that it used to be, or a trade, socially, all of those things. As you watch this young adult kind of unfold, you do the preparing the best you can, but you don't decide we're going to hold them back for another 3 years and they'll blossom into a, I don't know, that's unrealistic. It's not real.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk just practically speaking. Let's say you've gone through this and you've followed it to the letter with kid number one. And generally speaking, I mean, there's always that kid number one, and kid number one ruins it for everybody else because they get it right. Yeah, especially firstborn girls. Whew, they can run a small country,
really,
right?
They really make it tough. They really do.
And so you went through it and it all worked and it was great. And you're like, man, I'm going to do this for kid two. And so kid two has some sort of diagnosis. And so it's just not looking the same. And so it's feels almost like you're babysitting at some point, trying to keep up with all the things, which is not the intention here. And so do you help them? And is this even helpful by putting like systems in place? Like, I don't want you to have to be left at home every day, but these are the seven things that, you know, you have to happen for you to get out the door. Like, are we helping walk them through with systems, or is it just cold turkey and like, bro, figure it out? Like,
see, that's a great example. That's a great question. The answer depends on their age. I think by 10, 8, 12, systems are great, especially in that it helps them, you know, in knowing early on, being able to say, I think you did want to get with us. I think you were wanting to be on time. But once again, I don't think you're tracking time. And again, children are like, I don't know, whatever. You know, they're developing awareness over time. So those systems can be fine. They'll sometimes resist it, but you can push it. But by adolescence, having a good system that you enforce, that you maintain, even if they're passively agreeing with it, you're beginning to be ineffective because it's not their system and they're not knowing how to deal with it. You know what I mean? So it depends totally on their age and being aware that this thing, even that may still be working, because we've done it now, we finally got things in place, which oftentimes happens at later childhood. It's like, finally, we get it in place, but now a new project starts. You must be ready to do this yourself. And one of the ways you can tell often is that teenagers will push back against a system that has worked very well. You know, we've had this, I would go through his stuff. He would ask, I would say, what are you going to do today? All this was fine. And now that he's in, suddenly in eighth grade, he doesn't want to do that. Well, that's the time to smile and go, what, look at you. You're a young man. And I think this stuff bugs you. I get it. Totally get it. So what are you going to do? Because we're going to hold you to this minimum grade, something that's realistic. And then you figure that out. because you're old enough. It's like when you get a job and you hit your sales numbers. If you don't hit your sales numbers, you're not going to get your bonus. And the fact that you were trying real hard doesn't make any difference out there. And yeah. Again, that's a boost of confidence that you may be right. This system that I have for you may not be good. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
About half the time, they'll come back to the system you had. But you can't say yes to something until you know that it's okay to say no to it.
Okay. That makes sense. True story. When my kids were in high school, they had something called the Bug Project, and you had to collect a certain number of insects.
I know what school we're talking about.
Yes, you do. And you have to collect insects, and then you have to like pin them on a board, a foam board. And then you identify the species and the whatevers and the blah, blah, blah.
Got to have like 1,000 of them or something, oh, wouldn't it?
It was a lot. It was a lot. And there became a black market for like the cockroach, like or the grasshopper or whatever.
And, how sad is that?
And true story, the night before the project was due, a friend of mine, i.e., me, was like,
trying to decide, should I tell this?
Over at someone else, we're too far in. I'm going to tell you, I'm over at someone else's houses. We're with another mom. We're exchanging bugs. Then someone over here is going to come to my house and get that one. Everyone's exchanging bugs. The moms, that is.
And I'm sorry. Is this your senior year or your? No, exactly. This is for your. Yeah. Yes.
And so I say all that to say, I mean, diagnosis or no diagnosis, that's our propensity. A lot of us as moms is just to be like, I'm more efficient. I'm fast. I can get it done.
Let's just do this. That's right.
Let's just do it and get it done. And yes. I think that what you're saying is, yes, we can say, oh, but the diagnosis, or we can just say, oh, but that's how I operate, diagnosis or not. We tend to land in that place. And so it could come off as like, wow, that's insensitive. Like, we're not even going to try or give grace for the fact this kid struggles hard, because they do. But the reality is, the ones that don't struggle hard, we still have the propensity to do it, right?
It's true. And you have certain kids now that'll be going, hey, I take medicine. I can't believe you're not helping me. Like, kids will actually argue that, I told you, I'm a child and helpless. And parents are like, well, that's not good. But let's be real clear. That's a great example. That if you're the parent that did that, it's okay. None of those things ruin your children. It's just, hopefully, when we do feeding the mouth, parents wake up to the, oh, I see how this can be also a better way to not only prepare them, but reduce a lot of the conflict that we think is normal. It's just a more effective way. But I'm glad you brought that up, because I would never say that, oh no, you did that. Oh, you've ruined your kid. Of course not. It's not like, it's not math. It's sailing. Right. You tack this way, you tack that way. Oh, and you occasionally keep in mind that God is handling this. It's not completely up to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting, because I think back to when my parents, and probably your parents, are raising you, never in a million years did they have the time or to go run around and exchange bugs.
I don't remember them coming up to my school. Like, literally, yeah, right? I don't even know.
They're like, I don't even know where you go to school, kid. I don't know. Get on the bus. And so that was, I mean, that's just how parenting was, and that was good parenting. And now it's this swing of the pendulum where the good parenting is where you run around and you're doing these things. You're willing to step in. You get in this mindset that's what good parenting looks like. And I like you speak out, Dr. Kennan, saying like, listen, you're going to have to be countercultural in today's culture to do this feeding the mouth concept, because there will be times where it feels or even appears like it's not good parenting when we're looking at the big picture.
That's exactly right. And you will get pushback from well-meaning people, family members, other parents, or just the fact that you're in the classroom and you think, I'm the worst mom here. They're all doing this and I'm not. This is to give you the confidence that there is a way with teenagers that is respectful, that may look like you're not in caring, but it's actually giving respect and training for this, for their autonomy. Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
You just said not caring, but it sounded like you're not Karen. And my kids call me Karen when I'm too much. They're always like, settle down, Karen. Nobody needs a different booth at the restaurant.
Do you know what a male Karen is?
Do I what?
Do you know what they call a male Karen?
No, what?
Ken.
Oh.
It hurts. Hurts. I'm just saying, it's hurtful.
If the diagnosis fits.
I'm just saying.
Last thing, before we go, you said something before we taped that I think everyone should hear. And you talked about the purpose of a diagnosis and what that is. Would you just share that with us?
Yeah, I remember in school, because in psychology diagnosis, it's kind of soft stuff. You know, you don't have an x-ray of, oh, look, you're depressed. And the purpose for diagnosis is treatment. The purpose for calling a thing is to hopefully give you greater insight and into intervening and making it better. The reason we were talking about that is that we've entered now into such a psychological culture that sometimes the purpose for diagnosis is this feeling of relief, like, oh, it wasn't me, it was my depression, or all of these things that is a completely, that's not what diagnosis is for. You know, when I had problems with my knees and found out it was cartilage and not tendon, it never occurred to me to go, oh, now I don't feel like so stupid for the tendon. It's just, well, okay, so what do we do then? Mm-hmm. And so we want to be careful about that, that things like this kind of relief, sort of existential thing of this now defines me and it makes me feel less guilty. That's a, we could do a whole different dive on that. Because it does imply that, you know, you're not really morally responsible for your own behavior, and it's this thing. And it and that's very new, and it's creating very great problems with our young adults who absolutely define themselves way too much with these supposed brain conditions and so forth that, that aren't helping them to overcome it. They're helping them to explain to the stewardess, to the policeman, to the barista why you have to make adjustments for me. And that's not treatment, that's just narcissism, and it worries me.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, it's a good word. All right, Dr. Ken, well, we mentioned this last week. We're going to mention it again, and we promise not to do it every week. But we do have social media, and we would love
I've heard this.
Yeah, we would love for everybody to check it out. We are, again, the goal and the hope. I mean, Dr. Ken's wanting to really do a bunch of TikToks and other things, and I've told him no. The world is not ready for your reels.
You didn't see the latest dance move. It's good. This is different. It's good. Let me just show it to you. It'll be different.
Yeah. It's okay, everybody. We'll block those. But the hope is that we can have interaction with you guys, and that Dr. Ken at some point will give us like extra tidbits that we can put up there. We'll put some reels up from the podcast. Then also, we'd love for you to reach out and just be interactive. Tell us things that are working, not working, things we can cover. At the end of the day, we want this to serve you guys well and be a ministry that helps us raise kids, raise young adults well. And
good.
So let's do it together. All right. Thank you, Dr. Ken.
Thanks, Cynthia.